Well, Halloween has come and gone, but what did paranormal investigator Joshua P. Warren do? We'll check in with him with his paranormal moment in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. He is making international waves with his paranormal work, Joshua P. Warren, and he is back on Coast to Coast AM with his paranormal moment. Happy Halloween, Josh.
Happy Halloween, George.
What did you do? Anything special?
You know what's funny about this past Halloween is that you, George, were an integral part of how my Halloween went.
I was?
So that shows you how twisted it actually became.
What happened? Yeah, thanks. What did I do?
Well, you know, my Halloween was so weird and bizarre. First off, I got a call from a person who was throwing a huge Halloween party. And they said, we want you to come to the party tonight because, you know, we have your biggest fear here. This is something that we know you're going to be afraid of because we've heard you on Coast to Coast AM, et cetera, et cetera. And we think that George would get a kick out of this also. And I said, okay, all right. So I kind of put that on the back burner, and I wasn't sure if I was going to follow up that invitation or not. That said, right before Halloween, I was about to do a big tour because, I have lots of events and then various, you know, public affairs around Halloween. And just before I was going to do a tour, I went to a restaurant to have a meal, and a guy whose name is Drayton, he tracked me down somehow and told me that he was a real vampire. And he had heard me talking about vampires on this program with you. And he was very pale, had long black hair, and he had a cup that he was drinking out of that was filled with a red liquid. And he said that this was blood and that there was no reason that I should fear people drinking blood. Now, of course, here we are, it's Halloween. I figure, you know, come on, this guy is pulling my leg. But he actually had a lady with him, and to demonstrate to me that I should have a different opinion of blood drinking, he pulled this girl, I guess you could call her a girlfriend, pulled her arm out, pulled out a hypodermic needle. I cringed, absolutely cringed, and he pulled blood out of her arm right there in front of me and drank it. Just because that he had heard me talking to you on this program. Already, you know, I had like this just kind of sick, grotesque sort of sensation that flowed through my body, and I'm telling him, you know, all these reasons he shouldn't do that. So my Halloween was getting off to a bizarre start anyway. I did the tour, and then I went to this party because I was so tempted. You know, I had to find out what this thing was going to be that supposedly would be so frightening, so scary that it would mortify me and you. So I went into the party, and the hostess of the party walked up to me and said, "Okay, this is just for you and George Norrie." And I said,
great.
"Is George Norrie here? Is George at the party?"
I'm in costume. You'd never know it. I was there. I was watching you all night long.
You know, it's possible. I mean,
you wouldn't know.
You're a mysterious man. I have thought that could be plausible, that you could actually be at this party. So they took me to a back room. I walked into this dark room. They turned on the lights, and there standing in front of me was a life-size Robert the Doll.
This was a
guy who has kept up with all of our Robert the Doll discussions.
And you're going to have to give everyone a quick briefing on Robert the Doll since I sent you down there.
We're so used to talking about it that we hardly know, you know, where to begin.
Lots of new folks join us.
Robert the Doll is this creepy little doll that is in Key West, Florida. He's over 100 years old, and he is dressed like a little sailor. The persistent story over the generations is that Robert the Doll comes to life at to certain times and even attacks people. In fact, the guy who wrote the screenplay for Child's Play, the movie with Chucky, claims that he was inspired by Robert the Doll. And, you know, you and I had talked about it for a long, long time. And so finally I went to Key West. I met Robert the Doll. I did a report with Robert the Doll. And at one point when I was doing my report, I walked up into an attic. Actually, it was the attic where Robert lived for who knows how many years. And they actually had a reproduction of Robert the Doll in there, and it scared the crap out of me when I walked up there and wasn't expecting to see this thing. So it was kind of like a flashback for me when I walked into this room, and it was a grown man, and he had dressed himself exactly like Robert the Doll. He was holding the little stuffed lion. His skin was painted to be all pockmarked, and
just like the doll.
He even painted his eyelids so that when he closed his eyes, it looked like he had black eyes. I want you to see a picture of this. I posted it right there on my website. If you haven't seen it yet, George, this is for you, all right? Everybody, you've got to see this. Go to joshuapwarren.com. There's no period after the P. joshuapwarren.com, and this man had dressed from head to toe like Robert the Doll just to scare the heck out of you and me. And here's what's even more eerie. This guy said, I have listened to all the Robert the Doll shows that you did with George, and I know that George is freaked out by this. So I think it would be wonderful if I went to California or St. Louis and waited for him
in a restaurant
or a parking lot and came walking out dressed like this. And I thought, this is getting like criminal at this point, you know?
This is getting serious, yeah.
Yeah. So you have, you know, Robert the Doll stalker.
Did you warn him that I'm a concealed weapons permit holder?
Jeez. Maybe you should repeat that.
My gosh. I don't know what I... Now, on Halloween, if a Robert the Doll person came up to me, I could understand that. But on any other day, no.
Well, you're not a big doll guy anyway, but at this point, I'm thinking that maybe Robert the Doll or a clown would... Those are the two extremes for you, right?
Well, I did have a doll when I was a kid named Susie.
Yeah?
But not a haunted doll. Susie was made out of rubber, decomposed, and we threw it away.
Why did you, you just threw it away because it was decomposed?
Or? Yeah, it was rubber. It was falling apart, you know? Plus, I was 18 by that time. And
it was time to move on. Huh?
My parents said, you know, enough of this, George, and get rid of this thing. And so,
but, you know, it's weird because, you know, when I come on this program with you, we have all these fun conversations, and you never know how it's going to manifest in some person's mind so that they think, ooh, I want to actually condense all of this fear and go out there and freak this person out. And, you know, so if a Robert the Doll, you know, lookalike comes to you, at least I've given you some warning now.
Yes. Okay, that's a good point. By the way, when we get to phone calls in a few moments, I want people to share their stories on what happened on Halloween, and I want them to share that with you. I had a call a couple open lines ago from a guy named... This is incredible. He's a truck driver. He lives in the United States. He came from Transylvania, transferred here, moved here with his wife. Great guy, truck driver. He's on the phone, and he talks about how he visits Dracula's Castle, which you're going to do in May, and call in on the program, by the way. And he's telling me that he jumped in Dracula's bed until they got him to get out of it, and he loved it. His name is Vlad.
Wow.
He's dead serious. And I said, come on, you're pulling my leg. And he said, no, that's my name. It's Vlad. And but he goes out there every once in a while. He may be out there when you're there in May.
Well, maybe, because I am really, you know, looking forward to this. But at the same time, I'm wondering just how much I will see there, because, you know, it's one thing to think about the vampire phenomenon, but I keep hearing these stories, and people keep emailing me about these weird sort of lights that are appearing around Transylvania, around the Carpathian Mountains.
Like the Brown Mountain?
Exactly. That, and of course, you know, I probably, you know, not to be immodest here, but I probably know more than anybody about the Brown Mountain lights.
Well, they're up in your neck of the woods, for crying out loud.
Yeah, they're right here in western North Carolina, these weird multicolored balls of light, and this is the time of year when they appear most prominently. And so I did something a few days before Halloween that I kind of kept secret, because I have to have a few things, you know, that I do just for myself. And there is this one sort of secret overlook. I don't tell anybody where it is, because it's so great and so secluded. And I go there and just sit and watch, and these lights will appear. And when they appear, sometimes they will blink. And I became really intrigued by the fact that, you know, they were blinky lights, because now, mind you, this is not like a flashlight, because I have a device called a VLF receiver that can pick up electromagnetic interference, and
okay,
this is something that's only produced, you know, by something like a plasma. So I'm sitting here watching these lights blinking on and off, and I started blinking flashlights back and forth with these lights. And it looked almost like that they were blinking in response to my light. And this reminded me of the fact that in the 1960s, up there at Brown Mountain, there was a guy named Ralph Lell who claimed that one night he went out on an overlook and he was watching that dark ridge off in the distance. And as the lights started blinking to him, he did the same thing. You know, he started blinking a flashlight, and he claimed he was able to work out some kind of Morse code with them, if you will, some kind of primitive, you know, communication.
Yeah.
And they told him to go to a trail, this very obscure wooded trail, and he followed this trail who knows how far, back into the Pisgah National Forest, and eventually it led him to this rock face. And so the guy's standing there, and he says, you know, why have they led me here? And then the rock face actually opened. It was a false face, and here was the entrance of a cave. So Ralph Lell walked into the cave, said that it was lined with all of these sort of incredible, beautiful crystalline structures, and at the back of the cave he encountered several humanoid aliens. They looked very much like you and I do, but, you know, just with a few little quirks here and there. And then his story went so far as to say that they actually invited him on their spaceship, and they flew around with him all over the cosmos, showed him sort of holographic movies about how mankind had been seeded here on Earth, and that we were ultimately going to go through this big, you know, change and so on. People thought this guy was absolutely crazy, and yet, in his shop, he had a little shop there on the mountain called the Outer Space Rock Shop Museum that he used to sort of fund his investigation.
Mm-hmm.
He had in the back of the shop the mummified body of what he said was a little alien. And there are only two pictures known to exist.
Is that the one that Beckley has?
Exactly.
Beckley, Tim was just on the show, and that's on your website right under Robert the Doll. It's that
one. That's right. If you scroll down under the Robert the Doll picture, that is Beckley's picture, because Beckley came through this area and took that photo. Now, there's one other photo that I have, but I don't have permission to publish that. And so, you know, when you see this kind of thing, the weird stuff, you know, well, let me just put it this way. Ralph Lell, in the late 70s, supposedly killed himself, and it's controversial whether or not he did that. But afterward, somebody or some organization came through, bulldozed his shop to the ground, erasing any trace he was ever there. And to this day, nobody knows whatever happened to that little body. And so I have a bounty on this thing, and I want to tell you and all the listeners, if anybody has any idea where this body is, please let me know, because I want to put it in my museum. But that said, considering that I'm going to Transylvania, if these lights are going to be blinking, and, you know, I've heard many stories that it seems like this is some primitive form of communication here, I'm going to try to communicate with those lights in the Carpathian.
Well, let's see what happens. Stranger things have occurred, huh, Josh?
Well, yeah, I mean, because, you know, you think about the idea that here we have some intelligence that is so far advanced, that's so beyond what we can understand, and yet at the same time, if there is some effort to make contact with us, light and something like a binary code would be the most basic way of doing that. And so, you know, I'm going to have an array of multicolored lights and just try this out. But, you know, it raises the question, you know, if you were in Ralph Lael's position, would you take this invitation to fly off on some craft with these weird creatures? Well, even though they may look, you know, somewhat humanoid.
I'd go, as long as they bring me back.
Well, but how would you know that? You know, I mean, do you really think you would
go? If they're going to take you, they're going to take you anyway, aren't they?
Well, you know, that's the thing. Is this an abduction in that case, or is this just a voluntary experience? And I've thought about this a lot, and I think that I would go, but if you're faced with it, it would be so overwhelming, I'm just not sure. Are you sure that you would go, George, really? Do you feel that way?
I would go as long as I felt I was coming back. Look, I've got too many family members here that I care for and, you know, I would miss. And if they say, look, you're going to our planet, or we're taking you to another system, but you're not going to be back, or by the time you get back, they'll all be gone because of time. I would not go. But I mean, if it's for something that would last a few days on Earth, I would do that. Just to see what's going on up there.
So you would trust them then if they told you?
Well, it would be let me. You know, you're thinking about to serve man, right? How they trick people.
That's right.
To get in.
That's why.
You know, I come from the school. Look, if they have the technology to get here, and if they want me, they're going to take me anyway, right?
Well, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, they don't have to ask you.
Exactly. So. They can scoop us all up if they wanted to. So I would, but I would make it known to them, because they may not know, you know, okay, 200 years on Earth will pass by the time we bring this guy back. I got to let them know that's unacceptable.
Well, you know, that picture at the website there, the thing about it that's so interesting is that, you know, it was taken in the 60s. It's black and white. The quality is low, and yet Tim Beckley and others who saw it have told me that it looked organic. It really did look like something fleshy. This wasn't like some paper mache, you know, a thing that he had cobbled together just to make a little money. They say that it really did look like an actual being that was, you know, perhaps from some other planet. And therefore, I wonder, are these creatures so closely related to us that we could, you know, just strangle them, kill them if we needed to? Wouldn't they be afraid of inviting a big beast like us on the ship?
Well, all right. Stay with us, Joshua P. Warren. We'll take phone calls when we come back. Questions about the paranormal and also any unusual Halloween stories you want to share with us, we shall return. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, after we talk about some monsters, it'll be those Friday night into Saturday morning open lines. And when we come back in a moment, we'll take phone calls with Joshua P. Warren and his paranormal moment. Hey, Joshua, how are tickets going, by the way, for your Dracula's Castle event?
You know, in 3 days, it sold out. And, you know, because we are going for 7 days all over Transylvania. And we are going, in every castle that is related to the legend of Dracula. We're going into palaces and kingdoms. And, basically, for the amount that we were offering, which is a very, very good deal, with airfare and all that stuff, and all your accommodations, it sold out in no time. So I called the travel agent and asked her if we could add an extra bus or some kind of vehicle to expand it, and she has not gotten back with me. So I don't know if we're going to be able to do that or not. But if anybody wants to go, the information is there at joshuapwarren.com, and, at least you can contact us and let us know. But it sold out so quickly that it just goes to show how fascinated everybody is with the idea that they can go and visit these places you've heard about your whole life. And, of course, at the same time, you can sort of consider that the world is getting so crazy, you might not have another chance to see this place.
That's a good point. All right, to the phones we go. Let's go to Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Bob's with us, east of the Rockies. Hey, Bob, go ahead.
Hello, this is Melvin from Wilkes-Barre.
Oh, well, we've got you as Bob, but let's call you Melvin.
Sorry, George.
That's all right.
Hey, hello, Josh. And, listen to your show every night. I actually go to bed early so I can stay up all night and for one of 1 to 5 in the morning, just so I could hear your show,
Super.
And, I had this about 6 weeks ago. I was sitting in the backyard, and, these clouds come over before a rain, the moisture, and, like, it looked like feathers coming in, like brushwork, like the high stratus clouds or something. I'm looking up at them, and all of a sudden, this huge face of a man pushed us through the clouds, and he was as white as the clouds, came right through the clouds, and for how far or high they're up in the air, it must have been the size of a football field, like an anchor. And he had a pleasant look on his face, like a peaceful look on his face, and he looked like a Greek god, clean shave, hair brushed back, and he was just looking at me. I broke down in tears. I started crying. Put my head down, and I looked back up. I wasn't hallucinating. I wasn't on any drugs or anything. And I don't understand this. Like I heard, on the other night, some guy saw, a hand come out of the clouds and everything.
Jeez.
So, I don't know what this is. Do I think it was that the face of God?
Are you getting a lot of reports on something like this, Josh?
No, actually, I'm not.
I wonder if something's going on here.
Well, here's what's interesting about your report here, Melvin. You see, right now, as 2012 approaches, there are so many different cultures and countries and groups and sects of people who are expecting something to come from the sky, that it's almost like that we might be collectively projecting our wishes onto the sky. And that goes back to ancient times when, most people had no idea what was above the clouds or what was below the earth. It's still, mysterious to a certain extent. And so the idea that something will come to us from above as opposed to come to us from the same sort of dimensional space that we live in is so prevalent, this idea of being sitting on a cloud, that it may be that we are sort of mentally projecting this idea that there is going to be some kind of anthropomorphic, kind of manifestation from the heavens. Now, it's possible that you saw something like that, what we might consider a tulpa or a thought form, or maybe it's literally true. Maybe that there is some kind of huge being that will come from above. And I think as 2012 gets closer and closer, more and more people are kind of taking their idea of beings from beyond and projecting them onto whatever they think will be the format they appear in. And perhaps you saw some product of that manifestation.
Okay, let's go to Charleston, South Carolina. First-time caller, Ryan's with us. Good morning, Ryan.
Good morning. How are y'all?
Okay, very good. I hope you are, too.
Oh, yeah. I was looking on your website, George, and you got an interesting picture.
Okay.
I don't know if you have time to pull it up, but it's titled, it's one of the pictures of the day, Victorian Ghost Joins the Party.
Yes.
And I guess what everyone's seeing in this is a lady or a Victorian type of a lady in a gown. But if you look in the middle very closely, you kind of see an alien-like figure. I mean, you can clearly see the eyes, the elongated face, the nose and the mouth, and part of the torso or the body of the being.
Well, there are strange pictures everywhere. Josh, you've got one posted of a White House ghost, don't you?
Yeah, that's one of my favorites because, you know, everything at the White House is so controlled. And, you know, just a few months ago, I had the privilege of visiting the White House and getting a really nice tour there. And this picture at joshuapwarren.com may be the only photo ever taken of a full-bodied apparition at the White House because this photo was taken by a man named Abby Rowe, who was a National Park Service photographer. He has a vast collection. He has a large library. I mean, this is a guy who definitely had nothing to gain by adding some kind of paranormal image to his library, to his compendium. I mean, there's just no way that you could look at that and say that this guy would have faked it. There's just nothing related to his history to imply that. And so when you see this thing, it's distinct on the edges, and yet it's translucent within. And indeed, these pictures that are taken that show something which might be paranormal must be analyzed in context, especially nowadays when there are so many different ways that you could fake things.
Yes,
but the context of that particular photo is very, very impressive and substantial and credible.
Let's go to Wynn, Michigan. Jeff's with us. You're on with Joshua Warren. Jeff, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, George? And
okay.
Yeah, I seen a couple of ghosts when I was in the military. Once in Korea, and I was stationed at the Navy Hospital in Newport, Rhode Island. I was a corpsman, and we were all walking down Halloween night, 1982. We were walking down the street, going towards downtown Newport. And all the houses around there are around 200 years old or so. And this was in the late afternoon, early evening, and the sun was still up. And we were all together. We were all joking and laughing. There was about six or seven of us, and we stopped in this one piece of sidewalk right in the breakaway or the door that leads to where the fence door was. It was like a wooden door. And every one of us stopped at the same time, and we all got the gut rumbling feeling. You know, our guts were churning, and we all saw our breath. Every one of us stopped. So we didn't think nothing of them. These little kids were laughing on the porch like there's another one, you know. Well, we went out and we went to downtown and got pretty well wasted. And we were on our way back about 2:30 in the morning. And we stopped at the same place. All of us stopped together. And we were stumbling around. But when we all stopped the second time, it was like you could really feel it. We were all super cold. It felt like it was like 15 below zero in that one spot. You walk off that one little section of sidewalk and it's warm. Go back in and it's cold. I mean, that was a pretty weird place.
Why are these areas always cold, Joshua, where there are ghostly apparitions? Why cold?
Well, being super wasted is not probably the best way to begin reporting a paranormal encounter. But I will say that in terms of coldness, that is one of the more complex sort of facets of this field, because when it comes to a cold spot, you can ask yourself, is this something objective or subjective? Meaning, is this something that I could measure if I had a thermometer there? Or is this something that only I am feeling? And there have been cases in which I have been able to measure with my team extreme drops in temperature. I think we were at a haunted theater in East Tennessee several years ago, and we measured something like a 27-degree drop in temperature that happened almost instantaneously. The explanation for that is possibly that if some type of entity or something along those lines is going to manifest, it has to get the energy from somewhere. And so it might take the heat energy from the atmosphere, almost like a heat pump, to make one area electrified while another area is cold. When it comes to subjectivity, however, in our laboratory here in Asheville, North Carolina, we've been able to make people feel very, very cold by blowing electrostatic charges across their skin and what's called an ion wind. And when you do that, artificially with something like a Van de Graaff or a Wimshurst machine that just produces all this kind of electricity like the kind you've seen that makes people's hair stand on end when kids are in school, it creates goosebumps. And so it might be that sometimes you feel cold, but that's not because the temperature has dropped, but because these electrostatic charges are moving across your flesh, and that creates the same sensation for you.
Good point. Okay, let's go now to East Moline, Illinois. Hey, James, go ahead. You're on Coast to Coast.
Well, George, thank you very much. And for Joshua Warren, a pleasure to speak with both of you for the first time. I've been a longtime listener, George, and Art Bell was right. You definitely get it, and you have been a great host since Art's retirement.
And
I wanted to let you know about a weird Halloween experience that I had. At midnight on Halloween of 2000, my cousin was a caretaker for a short time of a local funeral home in my hometown of Milan, M-I-L-A-N, Illinois, pronounced Milan. And in this small two-story building, we started the tour in the embalming room of all things. It was next to the back door. And while we were there, the power went out in the building. We did have children's voices. The building was completely locked down. He was the only person with access at the time. And we also had objects thrown at us. And we did see a full-bodied apparition in the display area of the then-working funeral home. We watched it close a coffin lid. And needless to say, even without adult beverages, it was quite an experience for a Halloween.
That sounds great. Josh, you should collect these stories and put a book together.
Well, you know, here's something weird about my upbringing. When I was maybe about 16 years old, I befriended a man who was in his early 20s who was the caretaker of a local funeral home. And he was especially interested in the work that I was doing because I started publishing books when I was only 14, so I already had, you know, as a teenager, a reputation for this sort of thing. And he invited me over to the funeral home one night. And he actually had I guess you could call it a cabin or an apartment there that he lived in that was next to the funeral home. And it was weird because when I went over there, there were about three bodies there on stretcher-type contraptions that were getting prepared for embalmment. And the guy's name was Tim, and he said, I'm going to take a shower, and, I'll be, back in a minute. When I get done, you and I will go off, and we had some plans to attend some, social gathering. So he went off and took a shower, and I went off exploring this big, tall, multi-storied funeral home. And here I was on the third floor of this thing, and it was very creepy, but I am able to play the piano and the organ, and there was a big old organ over there. So I walked over, and I sat down, I started playing the organ, and all of a sudden, the lights went out. Boom. And I thought, oh, this guy is messing with me. This guy is trying to freak me out. And I said, Tim, come on, all right, fine. And after a while, I realized, the lights weren't coming back on. So I started stumbling around, feeling my way through the darkness. And the next thing I knew, I had my hands on a dead man's face.
Oh.
And I will never forget how that felt when my fingers touched a face of a corpse.
Oh.
indescribable.
It's a weird feeling, isn't it?
And I lurched back, and I kind of, you know, scrambled away. And as it turned out, you know, he really was in the shower. And when he got out, he said, I swear, he said, I had nothing to do with this. And it was so bizarre to me that I was in that situation, and the lights went out, and I was forced by fate to touch a dead man's face when I was just a teenager. So, you know, these places where bodies are brought together, who knows what made those lights go out? Maybe that was to get me one step closer to the subject matter that I've continued to explore.
Time permitting, let's get Ann in San Diego. Go ahead, Ann.
Hello, how are you?
Hi. Good.
Hi, Josh. I'd love listening to you tell all your stories. So I just had to call in and put my 2 cents worth in. As far as your overlook of seeing the Brown Mountain Lights, I've been there and done that, and I've been up to Pisgah Forest and all around in the area. And these little balls of light, my friends and I went up there about 2 o'clock in the morning. This is back in the 60s. And we went up there about 2 o'clock in the morning, and these little balls of light came up our pant legs. And we got back in the car and took off. But on the Cherokee Reservation, you can see the big balls of light, and they follow you up in the woods. It's really scary. Have you ever been there?
Oh, yes, I have. You know, and the one thing that I've never heard in all my years of investigation is that these balls of light can form in small spheres that travel up your pant legs. That is absolutely fascinating to me, because that reminds me of Nikola Tesla, who used to do these demonstrations in his laboratory when he would create these little balls of plasma that would roll around his body. And that is precisely the sort of thing I'm looking for. And if you would please email me through my website, because I'd like to follow up with you on that.
That's very important as well. Josh, we're out of time. Website, give it out, sir.
It's joshuapwarren.com, no period after the P, joshuapwarren.com, and you can go there and see the Robert the Doll costume, Ralph Lell's alien mummy, and all kinds of goodies.
You got it. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasore, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.